Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise, deliver the essential knowledge you need.
To be fully informed.
Exactly. Today, we're unpacking the electric car, moving past, you know, the hype.
Right. We want to dig into the sources, give you a really comprehensive view. History, economics.
The real trade-offs involved.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of source material here. So the first thing that jumped out at me, honestly, how old this tech actually is.
Right. It feels so modern.
But it's not. We talk about EVs like they're brand new, but they were around before the Model T Ford.
Before the Model T.
Seriously. Back in the late 19th century, electric power was often preferred over gasoline.
That initial popularity.
Yeah.
It's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it now.
Well, think about early gasoline cars. Loud, dirty, needed tons of maintenance.
And hard to start. That hand crank.
Exactly. Electric cars. They were quiet, smooth, easy to operate. They actually peaked at about 30,000 units globally around the turn of the 20th century.
30,000. That's significant for that era.
And it wasn't just about being practical or luxurious. These things were fast.
Fast? How fast?
Well, six different electric cars held the land speed record during the 19th century.
Six. Okay, that's not a golf cart. That's serious performance.
It really speaks to the advantages of the electric motor, advantages we still see today.
Yeah.
You know, instant torque.
So performance wasn't the issue back then?
Not at all. The most famous one was probably the Belgian car, La Jamais Contente. Looked like a rocket.
La Jamais Contente. But never satisfied. Great name.
And it lived up to it. Driven by Camille Genazzi, it officially broke the 100 kilometer per hour barrier in 1899.
1899. Over 100 kilometers. That's astounding.
They hit 105.88 kilometer, to be precise.
So if they were quiet, clean, easy, and record-breaking fast, why did they disappear for like 70 years?
Yeah, it seems weird, right? Two big things happened. First, Henry Ford. Mass production. He made internal combustion engine cars, IC cars, way cheaper.
The Model T effect. Economies of scale.
Precisely. And the second thing, maybe even bigger, 1912. The electric starter motor for gasoline cars.
Ah, no more dangerous hand cranking.
Exactly. Suddenly, the big convenience advantage of the electric car. Well, it kind of vanished.
And just like that, EVs faded out.
Mm-hmm.
Until the modern comeback.
Which really kicked off in the early 1990s, partly thanks to regulations like from the California Air Resources Board, CARB.
Right, pushing for cleaner vehicles.
That pressure led to developments and eventually cars like the Tesla Roadster in 2008.
Which was a landmark vehicle.
Absolutely. First highway legal all-electric car using lithium ion batteries. And it broke that 320 kilometer, 200 mile range barrier. That really set the stage for today.
Okay, so that's the history. Now let's clarify terms. When we say electric car, what are we actually talking about? It can be a bit confusing.
It can. The term often includes plug-in hybrids, PHEVs.
Which have both a battery and a gasoline engine.
Right. And range-extended EVs, REEVs, maybe fuel cell EVs, FCEVs, using hydrogen.
But for this deep dive, we're mainly focusing on the BEV.
Yes, the battery electric vehicle runs only on electricity stored in its battery. No gasoline engine at all.
Got it. So what makes that BEV setup fundamentally better than a traditional gasoline engine? Performance-wise, efficiency-wise.
Okay, the big one is energy conversion efficiency. How much of the energy source actually moves the car?
And for gasoline, it's not great, is it?
It's pretty terrible, actually. About 15% of the energy in the gasoline makes it to the wheels. Diesel's a bit better, maybe 20%.
15%? Wow. Where does the rest go?
Mostly waste heat. And friction. Think about it. That's why gasoline cars need big radiators, complex cooling systems, exhaust systems.
Right. All that wasted energy.
Exactly. Now, compare that to an EV. It converts over 77% of the electrical energy from the grid into power at the wheels.
77% versus 15. That's a massive difference.
It's huge. And that efficiency is key to the performance feel. You get that instant torque.
Explain torque quickly.
It's the rotational force. Electric motors deliver maximum torque right from zero RPM, zero speed.
Unlike gasoline engines that need to rev up.
Right. So you get that immediate, strong acceleration. We're seeing some EVs claiming 0 to 60 miles per hour. That's 97 kilometers in under 2 seconds now.
Incredible speed. Mm. And there's another technical point you mentioned earlier about simplicity.
Yes. Most EVs use a fixed ratio gearbox. No multiple gears, no clutch.
Simpler mechanics.
Much simpler. Less to go wrong, less weight, less drivetrain inertia, less waste heat again. It all adds up to better responsiveness and potentially better reliability.
Okay, reliability brings us to cost. Let's talk economics. The big barrier for a long time was the upfront cost, right? Mostly the battery.
Absolutely. The battery pack is still the single most expensive part of an EV, but the cost drop has been phenomenal.
How phenomenal.
Our sources show the price per kilowatt hour, that's the unit of battery capacity, went from around 605 back in 2010
Okay, pretty expensive.
down to just 100 euro in 2019.
Wow, an 80-something percent drop in less than a decade.
It's historically unprecedented for a major manufactured component like this. And that steep decline is what really enabled the modern EV market to take off.
So when do the experts think we'll hit price parity? Where a new EV costs the same as a similar new gasoline car before any government help?
The general forecast is the mid-2020s, so pretty soon. It hinges on battery costs dropping below that $100 per kilowatt hour mark.
But even before we hit that sticker price parity, what about the overall cost? The total cost of ownership or TCO?
That's where EVs often already win, especially in places like the US and the EU.
Because of fuel and maintenance.
Primarily, yes. Electricity is generally cheaper per mile or kilometer than gasoline, and maintenance tends to be lower.
And the more you drive, the bigger that saving becomes, right?
Exactly. The higher your annual mileage, the faster the lower running costs offset the potentially higher purchase price. TCO really favors high mileage drivers.
And you mentioned reliability linking to cost.
Yeah. Connecting back to that simpler drivetrain, a 2024 Consumer Reports study actually found Tesla was the least expensive car brand to maintain over 10 years.
Least expensive overall, including luxury brands.
Yes. That lack of oil changes, fewer moving parts in the drivetrain, no exhaust system, it genuinely reduces maintenance needs and costs. It's a structural advantage for TCO.
Okay, so the economics are heading in the right direction. But until that purchase price parity is universal, governments are stepping in.
Definitely. Policy plays a huge role. Financial incentives are key things like tax credits, grants.
Money off the purchase price, basically.
Right. But also non-monetary perks like free parking, access to bus lanes, maybe lower registration fees or vehicle taxes.
Trying to make ownership more attractive beyond just the sticker price.
Exactly. These policies help bridge that gap and accelerate adoption faster than the pure market economics might otherwise dictate.
Makes sense. Okay, let's switch gears to charging. This is often the big psychological hurdle, isn't it? Range anxiety, the time it takes.
It's definitely a shift in thinking compared to just pulling into a gas station for 5 minutes. The infrastructure is still growing, globally speaking.
So, what are the main ways people charge EVs now?
You generally see three types. First, home charging. Most people do this overnight. Typical home chargers are around 7 kilowatts.
So, plug it in when you get home, wake up with a full battery.
Pretty much. That's the big advantage, starting every day with a full tank, essentially. Very convenient for daily driving.
But what about longer trips?
Yeah.
Or if you can't charge at home?
That's where public charging comes in. These stations are usually faster. Many use direct current, DC charging.
Why DC?
It bypasses the car's onboard AC to DC converter, which can be a bottleneck for speed. DC fast chargers feed power more directly to the battery. The fastest ones were hitting 350 kilowatts back in 2021.
350 kilowatts. How fast does that translate to filling the battery?
With those high-speed chargers, you can often get back up to about 80% charge in maybe 15 to 20 minutes, depending on the car and the charger.
Only 80%, one out of 100%.
Ugh, that last 20% is interesting. For battery health and safety, the charging speed slows down significantly for that final top-up. So getting from 80 to 100% takes disproportionately longer than getting from, say, 10 to 80%.
Okay, that's important to know. Beyond just plugging in, are there other ideas being explored?
Yes, a couple of advanced concepts. One is battery swapping.
Taking the whole battery out and putting a fresh one in.
Exactly. Companies like NIO and Jinil are building stations for this. You drive in, a machine swaps your depleted battery for a fully charged one in just a few minutes, cuts down that refueling time dramatically.
That sounds efficient. What else?
Vehicle-to-grid technology, V2G. This one's potentially huge.
Vehicle to grid. So the car sends power back to the grid.
Precisely. Instead of just drawing power, the car's battery acts as part of a distributed energy storage network.
How would that work?
Well, imagine thousands or millions of EVs plugged in. During peak demand times when electricity is expensive, they could feed a little power back to the grid to help stabilize it.
Smoothing out the peaks and valleys in electricity demand.
Exactly. And then they recharge later during off-peak hours when electricity is cheaper and cleaner. It helps the grid handle renewables better and reduces the need for expensive, polluting peaker power plants.
So the car becomes an active part of the energy system, not just a consumer.
That's the idea, a massive distributed battery.
Very clever. What about charging while driving? Electric roads.
The electric road systems, or ERS. Yeah, people are testing different types. Overhead lines like trams, conductive rails in the road, even wireless inductive charging built into the pavement.
Sounds futuristic. Is it practical?
It's being trialed, but recent big studies, like in the UK and Sweden, basically concluded that building national ERS networks isn't cost-effective right now.
Too expensive to build out everywhere.
Yeah, the infrastructure cost is massive. They suggested it might make sense only if, say, major trading partners also adopted it widely, creating a compatible network. But for now, the focus is more on stationary charging and bigger batteries.
Okay, so better tech, falling costs, smarter infrastructure. But like anything, there are downsides. Let's talk environmental and safety trade-offs.
Right. Nothing's perfect. The big environmental win is local air quality. EVs have no tailpipe emissions, no carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxides, particulates pouring out in cities.
Huge benefit for urban health.
Absolutely. But you have to look at the whole life cycle. The emissions don't disappear entirely, they shift.
Shift where?
Partly to the power plants generating the electricity, especially if the grid uses fossil fuels, and partly to the manufacturing process producing the car, especially the battery, has an environmental footprint.
So is it still better overall?
The sources are very clear on this. Yes, even if the electricity comes from a fossil fuel heavy grid, the total life cycle emissions of an EV are still lower than an equivalent gasoline car. The efficiency advantage is just too large.
Okay, that's a key takeaway. What about non-exhaust pollution, like from tires and brakes?
That's an important point. EVs still produce particulate matter from tire wear, just like any car, and brake wear too, although
Although,
regenerative braking helps. EVs recapture energy when slowing down, which means they use their physical brakes less often and less aggressively than conventional cars. So, likely less brake dust.
interesting nuance. But there was a concerning finding about noise. Or lack of it.
Yes, this one is difficult. A 2024 study highlighted that because EVs are so quiet at low speeds, they were involved in incidents with pedestrians at roughly twice the rate of gasoline cars in urban areas.
Because pedestrians just didn't hear them coming.
Essentially, yes. It led directly to regulations requiring EVs to emit some kind of artificial sound at low speeds, an acoustic vehicle alerting system, or AVAS.
A safety feature born from being too quiet. Now, what about crash safety? EVs are heavy.
Very heavy. That battery pack adds a lot of weight, and this creates a real safety paradox.
How so?
Well, that extra weight generally makes the EV safer for the people inside it during a collision. More mass means more protection, generally.
But
But that same weight increases the risk of harm to others involved in a crash, pedestrians, cyclists, people in lighter vehicles. It's a physics problem.
a difficult trade-off. Does the battery placement help at all?
It does. Most EVs have that skateboard design with the heavy battery flat under the floor. This gives them a very low center of gravity.
Which improves handling.
Significantly, it makes them very stable, much less prone to rolling over in a crash compared to taller vehicles with higher centers of gravity. That's a definite safety plus.
Okay. And the fire risk. We hear scary stories about EV battery fires.
It's true, they happen. But the data we have suggests that per mile or kilometer traveled, EV fires are actually less frequent than fires in gasoline cars.
Less frequent. That's counterintuitive to the headlines.
Headlines focus on the unusual. The issue isn't frequency, it's the nature of the fire. EV battery fires, because of the chemistry involved, can be very intense, hard to extinguish, and prone to reigniting hours or even days later.
So, harder for firefighters to handle.
Yes, they require different techniques, much more water, and often thermal imaging cameras to check for hidden hot spots that could cause reignition. It's a different kind of challenge.
Understood. Let's zoom out to the global market. How fast is this shift actually happening?
It's accelerating rapidly. In 2023, globally, 14 million plug-in electric cars were sold. That's plug-in hybrids and full battery EVs combined.
14 million. What share of the total market is that?
That was 18%, nearly one-fifth of all new cars sold worldwide. And forecasts suggest it will exceed one-fifth in 2024.
So adoption is really picking up steam. Who's leading the charge?
Well, it's dynamic. For a while, Tesla was the undisputed leader. The Tesla Model 3 was the first EV ever to pass 1 million global sales back in June 2021.
And the Model Y.
In 2023, the Tesla Model Y was the best-selling car model in the entire world. Not just EVs, any car.
Best-selling car globally, that's a huge milestone.
But the market is shifting. In the last quarter of 2023, the Chinese manufacturer BYD actually overtook Tesla as the world's top-selling battery electric vehicle maker.
BYD. So competition's heating up, especially from China.
Definitely. China has the largest fleet of all-electric cars, already had about 2.6 million at the end of 2019, and it's grown massively since. The scale there is enormous.
And government policy is a big driver of this global growth.
Absolutely crucial. Many countries now have laws mandating a phase-out of fossil fuel car sales.
Like Norway.
Norway's the most ambitious, aiming for 100% zero-emission vehicle sales by 2025. The UK is targeting 2035. These hard deadlines, combined with ongoing incentives, are pushing the market forward very strongly.
But this growth isn't uniform everywhere, is it? What about regions like Africa?
That's a critical point the sources highlight. Sub-Saharan Africa faces huge challenges. You've got around 600 million people without access to electricity.
Which makes charging difficult, to say the least.
Exactly. And the entire region has fewer than 1,000 public charging stations currently. Compare that to hundreds of thousands in China or Europe.
A massive infrastructure gap.
Huge. Yet, interestingly, automakers aren't ignoring the continent. Manufacturers are reportedly planning EV production plants in something like 21 African countries.
Betting on future growth, presumably.
Seems like it. Betting that electrification and market readiness will eventually arrive. But it starkly contrasts with the rapid adoption in wealthier regions. It shows how uneven this transition is globally.
Okay, so summing up, we've seen EVs go from 19th century record breakers to fading out to this modern resurgence driven by tech breakthroughs and cost drops.
Right. We've covered the superior efficiency, the falling battery prices making the total cost of ownership often cheaper now.
The evolving charging infrastructure from home chargers to V2G concepts.
And those complex trade-offs. The environmental shift, not elimination, of emissions. The safety paradox of weight versus stability, and the unique challenges like quietness and battery fire response.
The global market is booming, led by policy and giants like Tesla and BYD, but huge disparities remain, like in Africa.
It's a revolution clearly underway, but you are now hopefully better informed about the nuances, the hurdles still to overcome, and the very real pros and cons.
So here's a final thought for you, something to consider that came up in our source review. Some critics argue that this intense focus on replacing gasoline cars with electric cars, while better in many ways, might be distracting us.
Distracting from what?
From potentially even more sustainable solutions. Things like massively improving mass transit, promoting walking and cycling active mobility, or even smaller electric options like e-scooters.
The argument that we're just swapping one type of car dependency for another, perpetuating a car-first transport system, just electrifying it.
Exactly. It raises the question, are EVs the ultimate sustainable transport solution? Or are they just the best car-based solution we have right now, while bigger changes to how we move might still be needed?
That's definitely something to chew on. It broadens the perspective beyond just the vehicle itself.
Food for thought. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
We hope you found it valuable.
We'll see you next time.